defined the themes and obsessions of 20th century horror, and as we chug on into the 21st century, it doesn't seem to be going away.
He let drop away all the trappings of what is called horror, and he moved into some narrative peculiar to himself. He invented his own genre, really.
Lovecraft tells you about the scale of man in the cosmos. You know, so he is really the most articulate about saying there is an indifference from the ancient gods to man. Lovecraft takes that an upli ante to the cosmos.
If you can think of a kind of supernatural horror fiction, it's almost certain that at some point in his career, Lovecraft applied himself to it. And when he got it right, as he often did, nobody could beat him.
Today we're going to talk about H.P. Lovecraft. You know him, you love him. He is the infamous writer from the early 1900s, known for his contributions to the world of science fiction blended with horror. The Cthulhu Mythos is probably his most well-known works, and we've seen his influence in many films that show us nihilistic type futures with demonic aliens stripping humans down to their basic functions before obliterating them into the nothingness. Films like Color Out of Space, Dunwich Horror, Mouth of Madness, they depict such a future. But what influenced H.P. Lovecraft? We'll discuss who he was, the type of stories that he wrote, the occult influences. We're going to go through some occult concepts, the Necronomicon, ancient aliens, racism, magic creating reality, and connections to Aleister Crowley. Of course, why not, right? Now, we also, previously, we did a show on the original old Dunwich horror film. I've read that they're remaking that. I'll put a link in the show notes if you want to quickly find that show on Dunwich horror. I did it in September of 2019. In this H.P. Lovecraft show that I'm doing, this is number 2 in a 4-part series. Maybe you knew that. Maybe you didn't. But yeah, I've got a 4-part connected series here, and hopefully I can release them sequentially. Probably not, though, because based on news and events, I have to interject with updates to other things in between. But part 1 was about cognitive models. This is the scientific basis for magic. Part 2 is about H.P. Lovecraft. Part 3 will be about Color Out of Space. That's the new film with Nicolas Cage. And part 4 will be about The Fourth Kind, the movie about aliens. Because they're all connected. Not loosely, but you don't need to listen to each one specifically, but if you want to find a way to connect the 4, you'll see the theme if you listen to all 4. Now, let's get into H.P. Lovecraft. And I've got a few sources for this material I need to mention. I've got a giant encyclopedia called The Occult World. We're going to use that. We're going to use Peter Lavenda's The Dark Lord, a book I've told you many times I suggest you read. Very eye-opening. And what else do I got here? I'm looking through my notes. That's it. And the rest is from my stupid brain. So let's get into it. Who's H.P. Lovecraft? He was an atheist, a nihilistic fella. Because, of course, atheism, nihilism, they all lead to occult spiritualism and alien beliefs. In the Occult World Encyclopedia book, they call this cosmic indifferentism. Very smart sounding. His letters that he wrote, Lovecraft, show that he was, in fact, atheist and nihilistic. He seemed to buy into science's, quote, ultimate evisceration of human cultural norms and comforts. And I get it, right? Like, I'm a fan of the horror genre. I don't know why. Why do I like watching this stuff? And I think a lot of people identify with that sort of thing. Finding comfort in these horrific things. I don't know. I don't get it. It's really weird, right? He was born in Providence, Rhode Island, to a wealthy New England family. Mother and father went to an insane asylum. These people always... they always go wrapped up in the straitjackets. That's what Paulo Coelho, he was put in an insane asylum as well. Of course, the writer of The Alchemist, if you didn't know. But at different times, the family went into the insane asylum. The dad went in when he was 3 years old. Mom went in there when he was an adult as 30. So he grew up without a dad, basically. You know, he was almost asexual. He only had one real love interest. Sonia Green was her name. Now, when in his books, in his writings, which, look, I didn't read them. I've tried. I actually had a lot of interest in H.P. Lovecraft even before I was digging deep into the occult research. And more than once, I've tried to read through his stuff, and it's very difficult. So, I've never read his books. His themes, his ideas are very interesting. The movies based on his books are pretty good, usually, maybe. There's a big stink about how they can't adapt the books to the film. Which, maybe. I mean, I like them, but I don't... I'm a weird kind of guy with my movies. I don't expect too much out of them for some reason. I kind of like the story more than the movie. I don't know how to explain that. But anyway, his books, apparently... these characters go insane researching the occult, which is a common theme you see over and over. A guy named Charles Dexter Ward, a character in a book called The Case of Charles Dexter Ward. He's actually killed by his own research into genealogy. The Call of Cthulhu has an RPG where that's a role-playing game. And the more one learns about the Cthulhu mythos, the closer they actually get to insanity. So it's like baked into the game for it. And you see this theme over and over. Going insane, approaching the occult enlightenment. A concept embedded into the Lovecraft universe, just like Aleister Crowley was talking about. Approaching Corone Zone for dissolution of the ego. One must fully dissolve or they would go insane. Now, there were tales were about a universe he had dreamt up called Arkham Country, which sounds familiar, right? Because in Batman, there's an Arkham insane asylum. There's grimoires like the Panoptic, I don't know how to pronounce it, Narcotic, Panaktic. Narcotic manuscripts and the Necronomicon. Of course, the Necronomicon being the most infamous. You've surely heard of that. It is a cosmology of multiple dimensions and dreamlands, a pantheon of outer gods, the great old ones. And that's what Cthulhu was. And Azathoth. Those are just a couple of the giant demonic squid-like alien gods that are going to be resurrected and kill us all. But the Necronomicon, this is a strange book. It's fictional. Written by the... Of course, fictional because Lovecraft made it up. Made up this idea of the book. And he claims it was written by the mad Arab Abdul Al-Hazred. And in the book, there's invocations of these old ones. Basically a grimoire book summoning these demons. These aliens. Now, the readers, they believe this was actually a real text. That's why this gets a little confusing if you, on the surface, look at this. They think that the Necronomicon's a real book and it's out there. Why you'd want it and why you would want to summon these horrific demons, I don't know. but that's what they think. Because Lovecraft wrote a pseudo-history of the book, making it seem very real. He claimed it was translated into Greek by Philetus, then in Latin by Wormius, then finally in English by, guess who? John Dee. That's right, John Dee. The guy who had the Enochian script language from language of the angels. He was talking to the spirits. He signed his books, or signed his letters, with the 007, the two-ball cane symbolism. That John Dee. Now, this is akin to this whole concept of the cognitive models we were talking about, and ancient aliens. They're blurring reality with fantasy. And our brains, at a certain point, don't discern the difference between the two. You watch enough fiction, it becomes reality in your mind. The Necronomicon, the title, believe it or not, came to H.P. Lovecraft in a dream, which is why these occultists believe it. It's like this Akashic record, this kind of like Crowley had a demon whispering in his ear when he wrote the Book of the Law. It's, again, and I say this over and over, it's all about this idea of the subconscious making contact with another dimension. Now, an actual, this is where things get real confusing, there's an actual Necronomicon book that was published in 1977, long after Lovecraft's dead, published by Avon Books, which we should note is also the ones that published the founder of the Church of Satan, Anton LaVey's works, the Satanic Bible and such. But the author of this Necronomicon said his name was Simon. And it had, of course, a mashup of all these fictional rituals for Sumerian and European goetic magic. So the book is oftentimes referred to as the Simonomicon. As well. Now, to make things even more confusing, there's a strong theory that Peter Lavenda wrote this book. He's very coy about it, from what I've read. He doesn't confirm or deny. He's been asked this many times. And as far as I know, I mean, I'm sure there's interviews I've not caught where he talks about this. I don't see that he's ever confirmed or denied it, but he's sort of flirted around the edges of it. So did he write it? I don't know. If you know otherwise, hit me on the socials. Of course, links in the show notes. Hit me on the socials. Let me know if you know for sure if he ever admitted or denied it. But from what I gathered from his own website, he did not. So we don't know. Who wrote the Simonomicon? I don't know. But it's basically this idea of creating reality out of fiction. Now, H.P. Lovecraft, he admitted his knowledge of magic was very limited, which is even more curious, right? Curious that he was able to write all these books with themes of the occult, especially during the, you know, late Victorian era. That was spiritualism and all that weird mesmerism stuff was all on and popping. Everyone was into it, doing seances and stuff. But he didn't know much about magic. He said it was limited to the Encyclopedia Britannica. Because you see, kids, back in the day, they used to, before the internet, they used to go door to door and sell these big, giant volumes of encyclopedias that every few years you'd have to buy a new set with the updated information. Sounds crazy, but that's the way the world used to be. Now, the occultists, they use his fiction as inspiration for magic theory and magic practice. And this is mostly in terms of chaos magic, or in your left-hand thelemic currents of Aleister Crowley. Because, of course, like in chaos magic, the idea is you can utilize any sort of archetype, any sort of fictional character you want as your area of focus. You can use Mickey Mouse if he wasn't trademarked. Now, Lovecraft, he was a little racist, okay? He was concerned with racial impurity. He was upset about the immigrants. He surely wanted to build the wall. He talked about in his stories these mixed blood cults. The bad guys, of course, in the stories. The Yazidis, these voodoo cults that were summoning the demons. So what were his views on racism? Well, he wrote a poem called On the Creation of N-Words. And it was about how the gods created Earth, man and beast, but needed something in between man and beast. Quote, a beast they wrought in semi-human figure, filled it with vice, and called the thing a N-word. And he also apparently had a fondness for Hitler, which, to be fair, a lot of folks back then did, like the Bush family. Oh, you know the Bush family was into that. Of course, Bush's grandfather, Prescott Bush, infamously helped fund the Nazi Party. And this was after America was in the war. And this was after we knew about the genocide stuff. But yeah, there was a lot of support for this Hitler fella. Of course, and Prescott was the director of the United Banking Corporation. And he funneled the money through this client, the Brown Brothers Harriman, which was the U.S. base for a guy named Fritz Thyssen, who was financing Hitler in the 30s. And that investment proved fruitful. It kickstarted the Bush dynasty. So you tell me we don't have some kind of Nazi power structure embedded in the country between NASA and the Bush family getting in the office. Anyway, we're getting off track. Lovecraft, he was racist, right? But, like, to be fair, not that this is fair, but to be fair, those are very pre-woke culture. They were very horrific to ideas of non-white races back then. Even back then, they used to, they were racist towards everyone. Italians and Chinese and everybody. Everybody got a little of the action. So again, and I've talked about this many times, I'm not one of those guys who supports this concept of like, this creator was, doing something naughty a long time ago, therefore we should no longer consider their art. Because you know what, when you go down that path, I don't want to hear you listen to Michael Jackson ever again. That's the path you go down. I think the converse of that, I think you use that art to educate future children about the evils of the bad things they did as a teaching moment. You're going to have kids listening to Thriller in the future, and then there's always going to be this asterisk of like, hey kids, guess what this guy went through. Anyways, you know my thoughts on MJ. Very controversial. But yeah, I'm of the camp of, you got to separate the art from the artist, basically. Now, the Dunwich Horror. Let's talk about that for a second here. What's that about? In case you haven't caught my show, again, September 2019, I'll put the link in the show notes. A guy named Wilbur Whatley. He was isolated out in this rural family. He was quarantining himself out there in the farmland, but he was doing these rituals at a place called Sentinel Hill. It was a stone altar and had all these ancient bones, and he needs to get the words to an invocation accurate, so he must access the Necronomicon. This is very much like The Ninth Gate, a film that I will be reviewing soon, or maybe I already did. Depends on when I publish this show. Now, because, like I said, this is a four-part series. I don't know how I want to do this. I'll probably just release them sequentially, but I might have little news updates in between. I don't know. I'm pre-canning it, what we call it in the biz, and I'll find the right way to do this. Anyway, Wilbur Whatley, of course, very similar to Dennis Wheatley, the spelling of his last name. But he needs to get this invocation right. He must access the Necronomicon, this book that has the grimoire of calling these demons. And the magic, it unleashes these atavistic and prehistoric powers. And it's this ancient left-hand path. It's pre-Christian, back to the early pagan days. So, because a lot of the folks believe this stuff, right? And why shouldn't they, right? I don't. Look, the idea here is that Christianity came along and all this stuff was pushed underground. And we threw the baby out with the bathwater. That's kind of what they think. And maybe they're right. I don't know. I wasn't around 3,000 years ago. Now, in 1928, Lovecraft released Call of Cthulhu. And of course, this is about the primitive gods, the interdimensional aliens. And they were being worshipped by these voodoo initiates and these Eskimo wizards, all these, you know, racial impure groups, according to Lovecraft. All these degenerates were calling upon these aliens and summoning the end of the world. Now, H.P. Lovecraft, he had a science fiction cosmology that was used much like Eric von Daniken's ancient astronaut theory. There are encoded actual truths about the cosmos. They're all around us. And these powerful alien entities and, new dimensions described by Einstein's space-time and non-Euclidean geometry. I mean, because this was the early 1900s, right? This is the time of Albert Einstein. And the physics, the quantum physics stuff was talking about all this. And the characters in his books, like The Dreams of the Witch House, actually have students of quantum physics, which later influenced ideas like the Order of the Trapezoid, maybe? I don't know. Order of the Trapezoid, of course, being... Was that Anton LaVey? I think Anton LaVey started that. That or Michael Aquino. Anyways, this is the cognitive model stuff we've been talking about. This is what we're witnessing from To the Stars Academy. You take a lot of these actual science concepts, find a way to morph them into alien butt stuff, and you try to make that the new reality. And maybe it's right. I don't know. I wish I had the answers. I don't. I just know they're trying like hell to make it reality. Now, Kenneth Grant, who's that? That's the guy who was following Aleister Crowley. And he created the Typhonian OTO, a sort of off-branch of the OTO, being the Ordo Templi Orientis, a magical group. But the Typhonian OTO, was calling upon Typhon, calling upon Nodens, these aliens. That's what his focus was with his branch of the OTO. What did he say? Well, he said that Lovecraft's dreams were actually visions from the Akashic Record. Of course, that's what he thought. And it's hard to tell how serious he was, apparently. He thought Lovecraft was linked into actual traditions of ancient, contemporary magic. He thought the Necronomicon was a real book, and Lovecraft got that influenced through contact of the Akashic Record. Of course, the Akashic Record being what Blavatsky was talking about. The Emerald Tablet sometimes are referred to this. It's this idea of the cosmic consciousness, sort of unwritten history of the world and the true nature of reality. And sometimes people's minds can sort of hack into this. There's no formula for how to do it, but that's what they believe. And Grant was connecting thelemic currents of Aleister Crowley to H.P. Lovecraft. For example, you've got Yog-Sothoth from the Lovecraft story, and you've got Crowley's Sut-Thoth, you know? Now, Anton LaVey, he wrote the Satanic Rituals. It was a sort of side piece for the Satanic Bible that he wrote. And two Lovecraftian rituals were included, written by Michael Aquino, the satanic officer in the army that was running the PSYOP branch, the psychological operations branch. And these rituals were called the Ceremony of the Angles. Or is it Ceremony of the Angels? I don't know if I wrote that down wrong or not. Anyway, it was that, and then it was the Call of Cthulhu. So you can see here, LaVey and Aquino, they thought Lovecraft was pretty legit. They liked how he had these amoral philosophies and this new prophetic power of fantasy. Because, of course, you know, LaVey was into the psychodramas. He was all about the setting the mood, setting the setting and the environment. That's why they do all the things they do with all the, you know, the capes and the dark stuff and the, you know what I'm talking about. Picture a satanic ritual. That's by design. It gets the mind in the right setting, which is what we learned from Michael Pollan's book that I read on hallucinogens. It's about set and setting. It's about setting the intentions and setting up the right environment to guide the mind into the right place. Now, Michael Aquino, he developed a ritual language called the Yugothic tongue, based on alien speech in the Dunwich Horror and Whisperer in the Dark. Therefore, it is not incorrect to say that Lovecraft was indeed satanic. Is it? Yeah, maybe. He's associated with Satanism. There's a strong link, let's say that. Now, I'm going to pull out a passage from Lords of the Left-Hand Path here, because it's very fitting. Quote, "These and other psychodramatic rituals practiced or suggested by the Church of Satan material are designed in some sense to make subjective changes in the celebrant and or to teach or illustrate some philosophical or historical idea within the satanic tradition, that they are sometimes fictional creations or even based on fictional creations, such as the Lovecraft rituals in the Satanic Rituals." Those are the ones I was talking about just a minute ago. "Makes them all the more satanic. The true Satanist is free to create his own religion or to accept or reject elements of pre-existing systems according to his needs or his will. Psychodramatic rituals allow the Satanist to do more than just read about strange practices and beliefs. They allow the participants to experience these practices in an active, living way. Such rituals are another form of indulgence in which the participants enter into new and different worldviews, try them on for size, and take them for what they want or need from experience." Thus, Anton LaVey founded an internal group called the Order of the Trapezoid. Oh, there you go. It was LaVey. Order of the Trapezoid. That was an internal group, a sort of elite portion of the secret society, inspired by Lovecraft's book, The Haunter of the Dark. That is a story featuring a shining trapezoid. Aquino would also later use the Order of the Trapezoid as the executive body for his Church of Set, where they viewed Lovecraft as part of a, quote, force of apocalyptic subjectivity. Which, of course, ties us into all these apocalypse trilogies like John Carpenter, Lucio Fulci, all these directors that have these nightmaric visions of the future of demonic alien entities coming in and nihilistic futures for the human beings. And we're going to cover those trilogies too, by the way. I got those on deck. But anyways, H.P. Lovecraft, his magic is used by chaos magicians who use postmodern left-hand path approaches to old occult systems. That's why he is still very prominent when we talk about these kinds of things. Ancient aliens, I told you I was going to talk about that. Well, because Lovecraft, turns out, is a bit of an ancient astronaut theorist himself. I'm going to read you from The Call of Cthulhu. Quote, "There had been aeons when other things ruled on the earth, and they had had great cities, remains of them, he said, the deathless Chinaman had told him, were still to be found as cyclopean stones on islands in the Pacific. They all died vast epochs of time before men came, but there were arts which could revive them when the stars had come round again to the right positions in the cycle of eternity. They had indeed come themselves from the stars and brought their images with them. So there you go. Listen to what we're talking about here. We're talking about arts reviving them. Arts meaning the mind accesses the Mauve zone where creativity resides, according to Kenneth Grant. And that is used as channeling energy to channel these things, right? From the stars. And what's Tom DeLonge's place called? It's called To the Stars. So yeah, I would argue that Lovecraft is a bit of an ancient astronaut guy as well. He's a satanic ancient aliens guy. Now, we get into Peter Lavenda's The Dark Lord. This is, I mean, things get real deep real quick here. I know I suggested everybody read it. I think there's good content in there, but a lot of people will get overwhelmed quickly because it goes real deep. Basically, he's saying Lovecraft and Crowley had many similarities, yet different, right? As far as sexy time, Crowley wanted all the sex with all the people. He didn't discriminate. Lovecraft was damn near asexual. He was the opposite. As far as magic goes, Crowley wanted all the magic. He wanted to create the world. He thought he was going to allow man to become God. Whereas Lovecraft viewed this more pessimistically. He thought it was dangerous and it would ultimately unleash the demonic monsters after these portals were opened. And I tend to agree with him. Now, the OTO. These are some notes from the book here. I'm giving you a very brief rundown. The OTO, Ordo Templi Orientis, is associated with the Knights Templar. And like many, they received esoteric knowledge from the Middle East and the Muslim secret societies. And many occultists went to the Middle East, if you recall, in a similar manner. Christian Rosenkreutz, Blavatsky's, the Brotherhood of Luxor, these folks, Crowley, they all went to the Middle East because that's where a lot of these esoteric themes came from. And you'll notice H.P. Lovecraft's Necronomicon is no different. It was written, again, by the Mad Arab. And it had the Sumerian magic spells. All from the Middle East. Kenneth Grant uses it as a grimoire. Because they believe this came from a very real time and place. At the cradle of civilization. From the Babylonian stargazers. Now, Grant and others, they apparently use sex magic to enter the Mauve zone. They use Tantra, other unorthodox sex acts used for magical purposes. And Grant, like I mentioned before, he started the Typhonian OTO. And who's Typhon? Well, that's the Dark Lord. He is the power wielder in the Mauve zone. And if you're wondering what the Mauve zone is, that is this sort of hidden side to the Tree of Life, the Kabbalistic Tree of Life. And this is where they believe that all true magical power originates. You see, it's all about gaining this magical power. Because ultimately, they want man to become God. And Grant, he believes that all religions have their origin in a single magical order that comes from the stars, not Earth. So you can see why they're so obsessed with the aliens. They think that's a source of magic. A source of power. So they're not worried about them being demons. Because in their view, nothing is wrong with evil. Lovecraft also talked about an alien race that colonized our planet and will be coming back. Doesn't that sound like ancient aliens? The alien race that were on our planet and they're coming back? The Anunnaki? Now, Crowley, he wrote in a book called Confessions, on page 398 to be specific, that Thelema would destroy the dying gods of the Aeon of Horus, or I'm sorry, Aeon of Osiris. And Thelema was considered this new religion, this cosmology, philosophy, ethics, all rolled into one. And he said it will, quote, coordinate the disconnected discoveries of science from physics to psychology into a coherent and consistent system. And you see, like, it's all about universality here. It's all about the connecting as above, so below, quantum with Newtonian physics. It's all, they believe there's one single truth out there. Now, Lovecraft similarly wrote in Call of Cthulhu, quote, the sciences, each straining in its own direction, have hitherto harmed us little, but someday the piercing together of dissociated knowledge will open up such terrifying vistas of reality and of our frightful position therein that we shall either go mad from the revelation or flee from the deadly light into the peace and safety of a new dark age. Now, do you see the connections there? It's all about synthesizing the information. Now, these also support the Sefer HaTemana and the theory that the world has been destroyed and rebuilt many times, with the seventh 1,000-year period being one of desolation and wiped out. Experts suggest we could have been wiped out a few times already, so maybe, like Atlantis. And Lovecraft speaks of the Great Old Ones, who are the aliens who keep coming back to reseed. Crowley thought the New Age was an exciting opportunity for man to become immortal. This was our time. Whereas Lovecraft feared it as the age when the old ones are coming back. Cthulhu. And of course, Lavenda's The Dark Lord goes much deeper on the subject if you're interested in more on that. But what I wanted to get across, the point I want to get across, to wrap this up. Lovecraft, whether he agreed with it or not, whether he liked it or not, is not very clear. But he connected in with what they believed to be the Akashic Record. And he saw visions of where magic would take us, summoning these demonic alien forces that would ultimately destroy mankind. Yet Crowley and Grant and the like, they all insist on doing this. They are looking for the actual Necronomicon. Seems like Lovecraft was warning us more than anything. But either way, you can see the connections made here. You can see that there's very clearly a place in the occult world for H.P. Lovecraft as the satanic prophet of the aliens and the New Age. So I want you to stay subscribed to the show, because the next part of this four-part series, like I said before, is going to be the review of Color Out of Space, a new remake of an H.P. Lovecraft story starring Nicolas Cage. It's actually pretty good. I watched it already. So maybe try to watch the film, because I'm going to be doing plot spoilers. And then, of course, the fourth part will be fittingly called The Fourth Kind, the movie. You can watch that as well to catch up with the conversation. And if you haven't heard part one, it's about cognitive models. That is the boring science speak for magic and all these themes we're talking about of creating reality through fiction. So stay tuned for part three and four, and until next time, stay woke.